Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Live with Barney.
I dominated.
Peter.
We're into that because we're horny for volleyball.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
It is The Net Live right now. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back.
Welcome back to you.
Yeah, back in Redondo, back from the desert. Nice and warm out there. Hey, we had our own little spring break last week. We know some of you may be on spring break this week. We appreciate you tuning in for another exciting episode of The Net Live. Kevin Barnett, your host, sitting next to DJ and shuffling the phone while eating candy bars or something is Chris Geeter McGee from Memphis. Thanks for being on the show, Geeter.
You know, Kent Stephens asks the best question. Where's Reed? You promised me Reed Pretty today. Where is the guy?
To which Jeremy answers?
Not here.
Oh, I thought it was, who's Reed?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, who's Reed? Sorry.
Reed thought we had a show last week. That was the funny part.
Yeah.
He's busy doing a little thing called playing volleyball.
Trying to make it to the Olympics.
Yeah. He's got a lot on his plate, so sometimes we hear from Reed, sometimes we don't. But we, I mean us, endeavor to bring you a great show each week, and we have another one planned for you today. We have Bill Ferguson of USC going to be joining us at 10:30. A lot of information there as it relates to the national championship coming up, Final Four, going to be here. We'll talk to Fergie about his season as well, his team once again near the top. BYU versus UCLA. Well, I think we're going to do this in College Volleyball Weekly, but we'll kind of set the stage before. It was a debacle, something I've never seen in sports. It was unprecedented, I think, in volleyball or anything else. We'll try and think of any other situation that's even come close to that type of mess that the BYU-UCLA match was this past weekend. Big news. You know, we go away for 2 weeks and big things start happening. The AVP gets sold. The AVP was bought, so we'll have a lot of information and discussion of that. We'll have some other stuff about news and notes around the world. National team scrimmages coming up. We'll have some dates on that for you. And then an iPhone review, an iPod, or pardon me, iTunes Store game review from our own Dan Madden. He's going to review his own game. Bump record.
Can you review your own game?
Sure. Pub your own game. Review your own game.
I'm going to pub it for sure, but like, I need some other reviews.
I'll have a review.
Okay.
I have a maximum score, I think it's 258. That's what I got last night while I was hitting the bump record right before I went to sleep. So if you have an iPhone or an iPad, you can download Bump Record. Check it out. If you're Geeter and DJ Rouché and you're still on BlackBerry, you get no love.
You know, funny you should bring up the BlackBerry thing. I'm at Angel Stadium opening night, and my phone dies, no battery left. I was walking around the media section in the press box asking anybody if they had a BlackBerry phone charger.
Nobody.
I was getting laughed at by people. I mean, heckling me. Then I went over to a group of, like, probably young 20-year-olds all working for the Angels. They laughed. Not one of them had one. They laughed at me. Finally, Eric Kay, second-in-command sports relations, sports PR, at for the Angels, had a BlackBerry charger. He is the only guy left in all of Angel Stadium. But it was a beautiful thing. But it's just amazing how abused I get when I break out my BlackBerry.
Blackberries are for real business people, Kevin. iPhones are for our toys.
I think that might have been true when the first iPhone came out, Jeremy, but I think we've moved beyond that.
Toy.
And people, a 20-year-old, you ask a 20-year-old what a BlackBerry is, they go, do I get that on top of my PinkBerry?
People can hack into your
iPhone.
Not hack into
my iPhone. I think the best heckle coming back at me was, do you still have your VHS and beta machines working as well?
That is fantastic. I love it. Hey, we out there want you to know that TNL, The Net Live, is brought to you by the good people at Spire Institute. They are our title sponsor. We want you to check them out, spireinstitute.org. They will help you transform into the athlete you never thought possible. That's
cool.
Spire Institute, doing some great stuff. So big thanks to Spire for helping us with this show. Big thanks to Volleyball Magazine for putting us on their website. Check out their website. All kinds of great information out there. Guys, I wanted to start with a couple of topics here. A lot of information being posted on our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheNetLive, by all kinds of our listeners. And we had information about the six-man. We've talked a lot about the six-man. This is a big event out here in Southern California, usually held first weekend of August, as I recall.
Correct.
In combination with the Surf Festival in Manhattan Beach. In years past, has drawn somewhere around 50,000 people, 60,000 people on a Saturday down to the beach to see costumed volleyball players play volleyball and be kind of absurdly drunk. Well, this year, the city, in response to all kinds of complaints from the residents, has decided to move it to the middle of the week. It's now a Tuesday-Wednesday, or Wednesday-Thursday, and it's suffering. Only 77 teams are registered for this year's six-man. This is a
Can I jump in, Barney?
200-plus teams. Yes, sir.
Good. Good. And it's only a few residents. I'm glad they're suffering. It's the dumbest thing I have ever heard. It is such BS. I wish I was like the good doctor from a couple of weeks ago and just start dropping F-bombs in here because it's just dumb. To move it to a Tuesday-Wednesday is a slap in the face. It's one of the most iconic beach tournaments in the history of beach volleyball. It is great for the community. It makes millions and millions of dollars for the businesses. And a couple of people complained. And the city is just using that because they're in a panic. They're afraid something's going to go bad. And they changed it so many times. And when they changed it a couple of years ago, all of a sudden the beach became contained. The beach was fine. The tournament was great. But all of a sudden in the street, you had all the kids running around and doing weird things. Well, you created that. Because you tried to change the tournament. You have no clue. I have an idea for you. If you're a resident and you can afford to live on the Strand and you can afford to live in the 200 block of Manhattan Beach, you can afford to go away for the weekend. And when you go away for the weekend and you come back on Monday, it's fine. No one knows you're gone and you don't even know what happened here. That's the problem. I'm not done. Shut up, Barney. And another thing, and this is my biggest point, for the people who say that there's all these problems, it's Saturday only. It's one day a year
right.
where there's a massive party. On Friday there isn't. On Sunday there isn't. It's Saturday for a 10-hour block. So don't panic. That's the number one rule I teach my daughters, even though one of them's only one and she doesn't know what that means. Don't panic when things aren't going your way. Regroup, settle in, let's come up with a different plan. My plan for you people is get out of town, because I have a ton of neighbors in Manhattan Beach, people that have lived there for 50 years that love the tournament. So it's stupid. It's a slap in the face. I'm done.
This is what the city wants. I mean, they want to get rid of the tournament.
Really, that's what they want. But here's the thing. They've created, as Geeter talked about, they've created this nightmare. So they're saying that the city is saying they spend $88,000 on security, $16,000 on fencing and toilets.
Mm-hmm.
$50,000 on additional staffing. All of these, minus the toilets, which you'd have to have.
Yeah.
Well, as a convenience, you wouldn't have to have it. There is a place nearby, but you want to have it there so people use them.
Hey, so, first of all, people use the ocean and the front lawns for the bathroom. We don't need bathrooms. Take that expense out.
The front lawn. Front lawn is exactly the problem. And I'm with you, Geeter. And I had a rant the other week, and Jeremy started playing some audio over it.
Right.
It was a lot of fun. It was very similar to what you just said. And it is. It's just a few people, and some, honestly, with legitimate complaints that people are throwing up in their front yard. I get it. That's a problem. But that did not require you to put in $88,000 worth of security. And I was standing next to the pier when a guy was coming down the stairs. He's already checked through the security at the top. He's coming down the stairs of the pier. He decides to jump off the landing of the pier to the sand at his own risk. Didn't jump anybody. There's a lot of space there. He jumps down. Four cops who were previously asleep in the corner underneath the pier run out and attack him like he had a bomb at an airport, like he was setting something on fire. And it was that kind of attitude that the city created, and the reason you have $88,000 for security, $50,000 for extra staffing, $16,000 for fencing. You didn't need the fencing before. You don't need the fencing now. So
they have
March 5th was the original deadline for registrations. They moved that all the way up from June. They then moved that to April 2nd. On April 2nd, they only had 77 teams versus the 200-plus they normally have for this event. And a projected budget loss of $90,000. That's what they were saying.
And that's what they're doing because they did it during the middle of the week. They cut back. All these teams are going to show up, and they're not.
And mind you, this is still with the entry fees a year ago having been doubled, basically, to every team. So now they set up a June 15th deadline for everybody to register. So they had to extend it all the way to June, and they're hoping that they can still run this tournament. They're claiming that it was because people thought the tournament was canceled, that's why they didn't sign up. I don't think so. I'm with Geeter on this. They're not signing up because who's going to take 2 weeks or 2 days off work in the middle of the week, or 4 days if you have to fly out, play, and then fly back, which is what people did from all over the United States, to come to this event. You're going to have no spectators. You're going to lose a lot of income, and it's a bad situation.
This event has gotten worldwide coverage. It's not just a local thing.
That's been the problem. It's set up just for the partying. So my question on the Facebook page this week is, are you going to sign up for this year's tournament? Are you going to play this year? Tell us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheNetLive. Geeter, is your team signed up? Is Flex signed up?
No, I mean, to be honest with you, I don't even think so. I mean, I'm gone that week. It's such a bummer. I mean, I'll be with the Angels during the week, so I can't even participate in it. It'll be the only third time in 25 years I won't be able to be there. The other time was when I went to Beijing, and the other time was when the AVP was in Chicago. So for me, I don't even have a choice. If it was on the weekend, like it should be, then I would be home. It's a complete bummer. To be honest with you, Barney, if you think about it, for locals, you could work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You're definitely taking Thursday off. Let's not kid ourselves. If you're taking Little Friday off, then why not take Big Friday off, the real Friday? You're really missing a week of work, and I don't know how many people can do that. It's stupid.
It's stupid. I like that end. It's stupid.
Period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you guys can't see me. I'm in a hotel room. It's stupid, and I ended it right there.
It is. So that's the update on the six-man. I would like to see more events like the six-man throughout the United States. I think you can have more silly events like that. You could take that model and put it in other places.
There are a few. I think there's one in San Diego they do. There's one in Rocky Point, Mexico they try. I mean, there's other events similar to it, but, I mean, the six-man's the six-man.
The San Diego, are you thinking of the Rock, the ridiculous obstacle course?
Maybe.
They have a thing that's very much like the six-man, but you're running an obstacle course.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Young lady named Kat Riley, who played at Cal a few years back and lives in Texas. We saw her when the Clippers were playing the Mavs, and we brought that up. Dane and I were talking to her, and she said, I can't fly out midweek. She's played in it for probably, 10 years in a row. Her team is the Baywatch team, and they're great. They're Cal volleyball players. They always finish in the top 10. Great kids, and they're not playing because half of them don't live in SoCal anymore and can't come out. So that's just an example of like a person who's just a good volleyball player, plays in this tournament. She plays once a year now because she's in the working world and can't play.
Chat board's getting a little ahead of us here. It says, if Alice Gates protested the Manhattan City Council, could he get it reversed? Move it back to the weekend.
Yeah, it's time to move on to this story.
Let's move on to this, and we'll set the scene for you. We're going to have analysis from people who were there. But BYU-UCLA, back on Friday, turned into a mess. And, Geeter, I know you talked to somebody who was there. Give us the exact rundown, the sequence of events.
Okay, Barney, here's the rundown that I have, and I don't know if it's 100% exactly how it went, but here's the short version of it. BYU is leading, and maybe Jay might know or somebody on the chat room that can see if I'm close to it, and Vinny Lopes can see if I'm close to it, but BYU's up 17-16. They service Bader down the line. Marvin Hall's on the line, kind of, the newspaper article said awkwardly, but Marvin called it out, so it should be 17-17. The up-ref overrules Marvin. Game over. Crosses his arms, 18-16. BYU celebrates. UCLA is devastated. Marvin leaves the floor. Al Skates goes and complains about the call, which I think is against the rule. You can't just get up and walk across and start complaining. So Al goes and does that. From what I understand, it was probably a 10-minute discussion. Al convinces the ref to get Marvin to come back out. Marvin gets involved in the discussion. They end up replaying it at 17-16. Of course, the kid, after 10-12 minutes, serves it almost under the net. UCLA ends up winning 20-18. Well, it goes to the MPSF. The next day, they decide the game is going to be replayed. And here's the weird part. At 16-16, UCLA serving, which I don't get that at all either. It's almost like they threw UCLA a bone. Eh, we'll let you guys replay it, but you're going to be at a disadvantage serving. They serve at 16-16. BYU sides out. On the next play, BYU roofs them. BYU wins 18-16. Immediately after, they play Saturday night's match, which is Al's last home game. UCLA bangs them down three straight, so they end up splitting for the weekend. That's kind of what I've gathered.
Okay, I just received an email while you were giving that account from Mike Sondheimer, who we will have on later, who was there.
16-15, actually, right? Yeah.
Here's the way the rundown is here. I'm going to read this. I haven't had a chance to read all of it. I'm going to read this to you guys so you can kind of make your own judgment. So the actual investigation into the matter after a protest was filed showed that a BYU player served the ball and the line judge called it out. The line judge signaled out but did so in an unusual way. The head official saw the line judge's call and misunderstood it to be signaled in. The line judge, seeing the call made by the head official, thought he had been overruled and thought the match was over. The head official, by his own statement, never saw the ball in or out. He said his view was blocked. He looked to the line judge and misunderstood his call to be signaled in. The head official, thinking the ball was in, signaled in and ruled that play had concluded. UCLA captain approached the head official and tells him that the line judge signaled out and asked for the line judge if he overruled the line judge. Good Lord, this is going to take forever. This is way too long.
Yeah, I like my story better.
Yeah, your story was better. The conclusion, it says here, the serve at 16-15. Now, this gets to your point, Geeter, about 16-all. The serve at 16-15 should have been ruled out as judgment of the line judge was the judgment of the line judge was that the ball was out. Given the point to UCLA, the score should have then been 16-16 when play resumed. That's why Saturday they resumed at 16-all.
Weird. Let's go to the replay.
But they went to a replay.
Paintballs. Geeter, what are you doing?
What's going on?
What are you doing?
Texting Fergie. Why? What are you guys doing?
Oh, it's that those BlackBerry buttons.
Is your BlackBerry making all kinds of noise? Is that what's happening?
Dude, you guys, all right? Listen, just go on with your story, bro.
It says here. I got one from Bill Ferguson, too. It says, need the call-in number. Apparently, Geeter's BlackBerry hasn't received the message.
I just texted him the number, so everyone can suck
dude.
It.
You're getting it from all sides.
I have a BlackBerry, too, Geeter. Don't worry, buddy.
Suck it.
And I'm way cool. Go ahead, Kevin.
See, if it's a replay, if you're truly calling a replay of that point, it should be 16-15 BYU.
Oh, my thing was there should be video replay.
I was looking for BYU TV or
somebody's
cell phone
cam. Apparently
somebody
said they posted it, but...
Okay, I could not find anything in searching for BYU UCLA volleyball. I couldn't find it. If somebody would post it, that would be great. I would love to see it.
Somebody said, Vinny Loops has this on Volley Talk.
Great. Vinny, we'll watch it. Give us the link, Vinny. Put it up there on the chat board. We'll watch it during the break here coming up
shortly.
Kevin. We have Fergie on. Yes.
Should Al be able to just go over to the upref, though, and get this whole thing changed?
That's the other issue, and this has happened internationally as well. With the Italians, if the coach steps onto the field of play, that's supposed to be a yellow card, which would be a point internationally. Now, I have not reviewed the MPSF rules, but if the coach goes over and talks to the head judge, I think, and this has to be checked, I would think that is illegal and could be a yellow card. I don't know if it's automatic yellow card, but I've seen it internationally as well. With the Italians, when we were playing them, the coach stepped onto the field of play, and that should be a yellow card. 100%, no question, yellow card, and it was never issued. This was in a hotly contested match between the U.S. and Italy. I believe it was the 2004 games, perhaps. I think it was when that happened. But I distinctly remember that. Yes.
Barney, And then I don't understand the 16-16 UCLA serving the next night. I don't really understand that ruling either.
Well, that's what I was saying, is that ruling was made because it was 16-15 BYU, correct?
Okay, yeah.
With serve. That serve having been ruled out would be a point for UCLA and possession to UCLA. That's the point
gotcha.
At which they were starting. So they were not replaying that serve. They were going from that point forward. because the ball was determined to be in by the line judge and the up ref didn't see it. But that was the miscommunication. I don't know. It's a mess, and you got to wonder if the rules were really followed, if the rules were really set up to be ready for this. I'm looking forward to talking to Mike Sonheimer about it, as well as Jay Hossett, because they're the experts when it comes to NPSF rule or NCAA volleyball rules. And what they think should have happened, I think, is more valuable than what I think should have happened, especially since I have not had an opportunity to watch it, but we will find it.
Two things.
Is that link
up
there?
Two things. Vinny just put it up on the chat board. And also, how about the two things this year, the big Spygate or whatever we were calling it with Carl McGowan in the stands and then this
right.
All happening to BYU?
Well, BYU, yeah. Apparently on the edges of the rules. Although the second time, not really their fault.
I can't tell by the screenshot that Vinny put up.
Yeah.
You can't get it?
I can't get it either.
Well, I can't tell if the ball is still, is it on its way?
Ooh, okay, I see it.
All right, you guys.
If that ball's on the wood, it's in. I just can't tell if it's
on its way out.
If it's on its way out or not.
All right, you guys review it. We're going to come back to it. A couple of other fun notes around the world of volleyball. Hey, we made it to 2,000 likes on Facebook. Thanks very much for everybody who's been liking us. And hey, thanks to Jordan Larson, who's been on the show a couple of times, for finally liking us this week. Thanks, Jordan.
You know, if you're
push
on
this
the,
over the top.
If you're on the show, you should automatically like us.
Should like the show that you were on.
Yeah.
Or maybe you don't like the show you were on. I don't know.
Maybe they don't like you.
But thanks to Jordan Larson pushing us over 2,000 likes. Next up.
You know what? By the way, I tried to get a hold of Marvin because I'd love to have him talk. I mean, we used to get great calls from Marvin back at the Ridge, but those were the glory days, you know. I mean, we'd get 2 or 3 points a game for Big Marvin.
Before they had video replay.
Yeah.
And then also another note, in cleaning, doing some spring cleaning here at the house, I found, finally, my copies of Spiker.
I didn't even know what Spiker was until I walked in the door today.
Spiker is a film about the 1984 gold medal team and the story of Catch Ficelli and Sonny Reston. I think it's Reston. Well, that might be somebody from now, a boxer or something. Sonny something or other, who's supposed to be Tim Hovland, I believe. And Catch Ficelli is supposed to be Karch Karai, allegedly. That's the way I've heard it.
We watched about 20 minutes of it in the background where we were setting up.
Yes.
And there was probably about 5 sentences of dialogue in that 20 minutes.
And several shots of Craig Buck jumping on some boxes.
Karch
Karai. Hitting the Vertec?
It's not even in the same league as Beach Kings. Not even in the same league.
Have you seen it?
Yes, but I was a kid back then. I mean, early high school.
All right. I've seen both films, and I truly believe Spiker is the winner for worst volleyball film ever.
In the 20 minutes that I saw, I would give it that, yes.
And Matt Gardhoff needs to put together a projector. Or a big screen TV down at the VolBQ that's happening before Long Beach.
He wanted to project it on the side of the pyramid.
On the side of the pyramid. And everyone will have an opportunity to see this spectacular film, Spiker.
Good stuff.
You can't get it anywhere. I looked one time. eBay had a copy for like $50.
You're going to have to blur some images out at the beginning there. I think it should be an R-rated movie.
Hey, man, Beach Players get some action. that's the moral of the story in there. So check it out. At one point, the coach, Coach Domes, supposed to be Coach Beal, orders the guys to have 7 minutes on the Russian Leaper. The Russian Leaper is a platform with bungee cords attached. You jump and it flings you back to the ground. 7 minutes on the Russian Leaper would be a long, long time.
And now when you say go see it, people are going to have to like break out their beta tapes because you're not getting it on Netflix or...
It's nowhere.
No.
It's on VHS only.
People are coming over here to watch it.
It was found by Jen Jackson, member of the national team for the women back in 1997-98, found in a thrift store in Colorado Springs.
Nice.
Paid 25 cents for a copy of Spiker. It is epic. Rod Wild in there, Sunderland in there, Dvorak. The whole 14 basically has cameos standing around. Dvorak with a producer credit and line. Plus a gnarly
facial.
Yeah. Who are you texting now, Geeter?
Hey, stop it. I'm trying to tell you guys I want to talk. I'm just kidding. God, this is going to hurt the show if you hear me text every time. I apologize.
Man, the chat board, I wish you could see it because they are killing you.
I'm looking at the chat board. I'm in the chat board right now.
I might have to go buy a VCR at an antique store. Will a BlackBerry play it?
Yeah, listen, I love it. I love it. Keep it coming. I'm going to stop texting. It's a problem. I understand. When's Fergie coming on? And if he's not Coach of the Year this year, who is? Can you tell me? They've won 16 in a row, this young USC team.
Yeah, everybody talked about Fergie having to be in rebuilding mode and that they were going to struggle. It appears they've gotten through their struggles, and they're now on their way climbing at just the right time of year. Plus, they're going to have home court advantage should they make the Final Four. They've got to get through the MPSF tournament first, so we'll have to see how that goes for them. We will have Bill Ferguson on the other side of the break. We'll talk to him. We still have great talk about the AVP being sold. We'll have that discussion after Fergie is done. We have the College Volleyball Weekly coming up, where we will continue to talk about this UCLA match versus BYU, and I'm sure there was a bunch of other great college action that we'll discuss with our correspondents Mike and Jay. Plus, Dan Madden coming on to talk about the iPhone game, the best iPhone game for volleyball.
Going to have to get an iPhone now.
Just for this game, just for bump record.
Yep.
Then you can get past my 258.
Done.
I'm going to go at it right now.
During the break?
Yeah.
Cool. I'll play a long song for you.
All right. The Net Live on the Volleyball Magazine. Right back. You don't have to find the best college coaches. They find you at Spire Institute. Spire's postgraduate volleyball academy wants athletes. Spire delivers customized volleyball training and competition led by head coach John Hawks, athletic development with Michael Johnson Performance, and educational options all in Olympic-grade facilities. There is no better way to impress college coaches and increase scholarship opportunities. Spire Institute, postgraduate men's and women's programs in multiple sports. It's not taking a year off, it's adding a year to your future. Sign up today at spireinstitute.org. DJ Roche, put us back on the air.
Done.
It's getting a little trippy in the middle of this song. The Net Live here on Volleyball Magazine. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you tuning in, and thanks to all our sponsors, Aspire Institute, aspireinstitute.org, Volleyball Magazine, the AVCA. We appreciate all the support we're getting from all around the volleyball universe. Kevin Barnett in studio along with DJ Jeremy Roche, and on the phone from Memphis because he's out there with the Clippers. Clippers, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just making sure that you know what bus you're on, Chris McGee.
You could have finished better than the Lakers, Keith?
I tell you what.
They're a half game back. Well, the Lakers
you
guys have a tough schedule to end the season.
I've been watching some basketball lately. Watched OKC.
They're good.
Watched them annihilate the Lakers, basically, down the stretch. Watched the Clips the other night against the Lakers. Watched that game. I believe a couple of things now. Blake Griffin can't yet play in the post with Pau Gasol or Andrew Bynum. He needs a pick and roll to get open. He can't get his own shot down there against those two monsters. Blake Griffin is unbelievable when he gets two steps or one step towards the basket.
People just get out of the way.
Yeah, he's gnarly. He put Pau Gasol, he gave him a forearm shiver and then smashed the ball into the hoop. Unbelievable. Posterized him multiple times, and Pau took 20 minutes of game time to recover. Just emotionally, mentally was devastated, shattered, but L.A. still won.
Yep.
And I also believe the Lakers don't have enough guys on that roster, don't have a bench enough to withstand a long playoff season. I don't think they can touch OKC.
And don't count out the Spurs either. The Spurs have quietly won 11 in a row, and I still think Oklahoma City's the team to beat. But to answer Jeremy's question, this road trip, the three games, tonight in Memphis, Oklahoma City, and Minnesota will be everything for the Clippers. If they go 2-3 on this road trip, I think they might grab that three seed over the Lakers. If they don't, if they go 1-2 or possibly 0-3, then I think the Lakers will probably win the Pacific Division. But don't sleep on Memphis, man. Memphis is
half a
game back, and they're a good squad.
Rudy Gay, yeah, Memphis.
Yep.
I enjoyed Clippers Live the other night with one Chris McGee. Kiki Van Der Way. And who else is in there?
Don McLean.
Don McLean. That's right. I remember his name. He used to come in to the restaurant I worked at back in the day. I think he played for the Bullets back then. You need a Bullets guy?
The Washington Wizards.
Yeah, now the Wizards. But I remember him coming in. He had like a convertible full-size Mercedes, which I'd never seen before.
Nice.
Never seen that one. Hey, Geeter, we have our first guest if you want to do an intro since we have you.
I will happily bring this young man in. His team is now ranked number one in the country. They have won 15 matches in a row. The last time they lost was February 3rd. This was supposed to be a rebuilding year for the program, but Bill Ferguson has the young, mighty Trojans right where he wants them, peaking at the right time. I will be the first to congratulate him. You are this year's Coach of the Year in the MPSF. Congratulations, Fergie.
Thanks for the intro.
All right, Coach of the Year.
Pardon me?
I said, all right, Coach of the Year, pressure's on now. 15 in a row.
I'm still trying to live up to your expectations, Barney.
Well, aren't we all?
How you doing?
I'm good, and I know there's a variety of topics we need to talk about. Chris just mentioned 15-0 in your last 15 matches. What an incredible streak. Do your players even remember what it's like to leave a match with a loss?
I think the important thing is the good thing that's led to us being able to win 15 in a row is they pretty much forget what happened right when it's over. And our guys are pretty good at looking ahead to the next match. And our leadership's been great. Chiarelli and Steve Shandrick are our two senior captains. And, even after Saturday night, we had a great little chat right after the match that, hey, enjoy this, but, it doesn't mean anything unless we take care of Thursday. So,
Billy. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think Tony deserves a lot of credit. I mean, Tony has gotten a lot of flack in the past. Everyone's always wanted him to be this great leader, and now it's his turn. And it seems to be that he has really matured and stepped up and deserves a lot of the credit and absolutely is a Player of the Year candidate.
Without question. Tony's been unbelievable this year. It's funny. We have exit interviews at the end of every year. I sit down and meet with all the guys, and we talk. And obviously, last year's exit meetings were quite long. And And after the last couple of years, Tony has always expressed that he's always been a captain on every team he'd ever been on until he got here, and expressed how badly he wanted to be a leader. And, you know, it wasn't in the cards at first. You know, first he had to kind of get his feet wet here. And secondly, we've had guys that have been great natural leaders that were here ahead of him in the pecking order. And I, you know, so it's been really tough on him. He's very much cut out to be that guy. You know, both his parents have coached. He understands, you know, he understands the ebb and flow of a team and understanding. I mean, he and I were talking one-on-one after the match the other night, and he's, you know, we're already talking about practice, you know, and talking about how the tempo's got to be and, you know, what we want to get out of it. And he had some great things to say at the end of last year, and I think he's really lived up to the billing and done a great job. And, you know, there's been instances throughout the year where we've said, hey, you know, we want you to do something a different way. And I think the last meeting we had was, you know, gosh, during the first quarter or third of the season. He's been pretty phenomenal as a captain and leader since then. And he was great before that, you know, but just been unbelievable. And he kind of wills us to win. We are in situations where we're down and he, you know, he's moving on to the next play. Sure, he's fiery. He might get upset with himself if he makes an error he didn't think he should make, or, you know, or we don't convert a play we should. But he's really done a great job of working on being a leader and doing such.
Fergie, I love anybody that wears the number 14 as Tony does. What do you think his future is with the national team?
I think it's really bright. I mean, what, he was our leading scorer at the Pan Am Games, wasn't he? And that was against, you know, everybody else's A team. He's the thing that Tony has on some of the. If you look at the elite outside hitters in the league, there I would say there's four of them. You got Tony, you got Taylor Sander, you got Tilly, and you got Lawson. All three of those guys are pretty slightly built. Tony's a big kid, and Tony can throw around a lot of weight in the weight room, and Tony likes to lift. So if you're putting, you know, if you're a coach or a general manager for a professional team and you're putting it on the line for a guy, I certainly would think Tony is a probably better bet to last physically. He has a lot more power than the other guys, the other three guys we're talking about. Not that they're all four of those guys, by the way, first round draft pick type guys, don't get me wrong, but we're splitting hairs here. But I think Tony hits the high ball a little bit better than those other guys, and that's, I think, what sets them apart. They all four pass really well. They all four hit with good range. They all, you know, they all four block pretty well. But I think that's the thing where I look at Tone. He's a guy that you can ride. I think internationally, I think that's what's going to give him a little bit of an edge.
Hey, Billy, Micah Christensen, your freshman center. I mean, I remember when Chip McCaw set the waves to a title as a freshman. It seems like this kid has that same kind of demeanor and leadership ability, and he has to be the key to this whole thing.
He's really important to what we do. I would say every match we play, there is some very minute detail that he picks up on from video that comes out in the game. We were playing a team in a really important match, up 1-0 and tight in the second game. I think we were up 22 or 23 to 22, or maybe there was, you know, maybe we had a, you know, they'd gone on a run to get close. Out of a timeout, we had seen in video over their last few matches that every once in a while this team would absolutely have two guys just haul butt to the pin and get the pin hitter and send one guy out to the D and leave the middle wide open. And, you know, our play that we called out of the timeout didn't really seem to be middle heavy, and we were looking at probably going to the pins, and Micah saw it and went to the middle and we bounced it and, you know, you know, we looked at him and just kind of, wow, you know, nice little catch. And, you know, we laughed at it in between. I said, hey, that was just like video, and it's probably like the fourth time I've said it to him during the year.
How valuable is a guy like Nygaard to your staff in terms of teaching blocking and just where he's been?
Invaluable. I think right now he's the best guy in our league at teaching blocking. I mean, there's probably some Cougars that would probably say Carl probably is, and I could see that argument. But Jeff is, with today's athlete, or student athlete, if you will, he has just a really cool way of communicating with the guys. He's really, you know, you guys kind of know him, so it's easier for you to know, but he's pretty even keeled all the time. He's got a dry, sarcastic sense of humor that sometimes younger people don't always get, but our guys get it. And obviously, I mean, the guy's a three-time Olympian, so it's when you're a kid that's trying to both on the beach and indoor. So, you know, every kid in our gym that has an aspiration to play in the Olympic Games, you know, looks at him and says, wow, this guy's been where I want to go. I better listen to him.
Fergie, when I think about the young sitters, you mentioned your own sitter, Micah, and then I think about Pepperdine, I mean, Matt West over there at Pepperdine.
Yeah.
Stepping in right away and having an impact at the college level. And I was just recently at Houston, and I ran into the JVA there, and this is kind of a satellite tournament, but it's a monster tournament, and the participation that goes on the female side. Is the participation and the level of boys volleyball in club and in high school still on the rise despite the relative stagnation to the women as far as numbers and participation goes?
Yeah, there's more kids playing. The competition is greater, and I think they're real. You know, when you see, if you talk directly about Matt and Micah, our national team pipeline is so much better than it was, you know, even 5 years ago. You know, both Micah and Matt are the same age, and you know, USA Volleyball made a decision to, you know, they were young enough to play with the youth national team last year. But they were both probably the two best setters in both age groups. So USA was able to say, Micah, you're going to go with the junior team and set them at the World Championships, and Matt, you're going to set the youth team at the World Championships. So so between all the participation at the high school and junior level, huge. And then I think USA Volleyball is doing a good job in developing these guys internationally now.
Fergie, I'm looking at your photo on your website. It's the team photo, and everybody looks good. Nygaard looks good. J.J. Riley's still there. He's not X'd out, which is a good thing. You haven't photoshopped him out. But I noticed that you are 2 feet in front of everyone else and right in the center. Is this your idea?
No, there's a railing there, which would, if I was level with everybody else, would probably be a little bit weird. Weirder than me standing like out in front, but your depth perception is admirable.
Fergie, is there any chance we get Nygaard, Cam Green, and all other eight coaches? How many you have in sweater vests for the MPSF playoffs?
Oh yes,
probably not going to happen. But I haven't rocked one of those in a while.
I love those.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's come or go. I've been known to rock one still here or there. It's really more of a functional thing than it is a fashion thing, obviously. I got a little bit of a gut that hangs over, and so you walk around with a shirt out or a polo shirt out, you know, it looks kind of sloppy. So you got to cover up the, you know, the hangover, if you will.
Hey, Fergie, the fact that you, if you beat Long Beach State and my Matadors, who could be sneaky, and I know you know that, Bill, you'll be hosting if you win that first-round playoff game, the MPSF, and possibly the Final Four. I have to keep that in perspective. That's exciting if I'm you.
Well, I don't, you know, we didn't come in with a whole lot of expectation other than we thought, internally, we thought we were good enough to be in the hunt this year. I think if you asked if I thought we'd be in first right now, I'd probably say not. But I think just the fact that our team just looks ahead to the next game, keeps it all, you know, it helps us just focus on what we have to do. We don't really have to spend a whole lot of time worrying about our guys and where their heads are at. Tony and Steve are doing a really good job of keeping our guys there. Our young guys are all very mature young men. You know, guys like Micah and Feathers and those guys. Those guys all grind every day. So we can spend our time focusing on what matters and not have to worry about some of the outside, you know, talk or whatever. But, yeah, being able to host everything would be pretty phenomenal. But, you know, we're highly aware that, you know, we got to take care of Thursday first, and hopefully if that goes well, we got to take care of Saturday. And both those teams are probably, you know, with the bullet going up, and they're both at pretty difficult venues to play. And we haven't seen these teams since the first week of league. So there's not a lot of familiarity just from being on the court with those guys. So, you know, if we get it, we certainly will have earned it, that's for sure.
Fergie, you talked about seniors on your team. You talked about the youngsters on your team contributing. What have you done to try and blend those two groups, whether it's a national team or a college team? Lots of times the two groups don't necessarily understand one another, but it seems like your team has all come together under a single purpose. What have you done to construct an environment that lets seniors and freshmen understand one another?
The most important thing is recruit character. And, you know, when I first, you know, got here, we had a real idea and sense, you know, some of the guys had this kind of seniority thing and, you know, there's this, you know, hey, freshmen do this, freshmen do that. Building the program, we had to rely on freshmen right away to play. So we eliminated the whole, you know, the freshmen, you know, they get the water and they do some setup stuff, but there's none of that real stuff going on in our gym. It's just, you're on the team, you're on the team. And over the years, you know, now we have what our senior classes in their 3 years has been to two Final Fours. And so we've been able to build a culture of team, you know, unity and success. I think specifically if you take a guy like Tony, who when he first got here had a lot of guys that were older than him, you know, we had Luke Morris was a senior libero, Hunter Current was a junior middle blocker, and then we did have some other guys that came in who had played a whole year before him. But you have Tony come in, and here's this guy that's a freshman that's got to carry a gigantic load, not as a freshman, but still think about, God, am I really, you know, I've been a leader everywhere, and right now I've got to kind of, you know, play second fiddle, so to speak. So you've got an older group like that that's been involved from day one that has wanted to have more of a connection with the younger guys. And that's one thing that Tony's always been really good with is taking the young guys and kind of telling them, hey, this is how we do things. And do it in a way that's constructive. And, you know, so with older guys like that, you know, and Madison McKibben's a junior, he's kind of a leader of kind of the middle of the pack, I'd say age-wise, you know. So we've just got a lot of good character guys. And like I talked about, Micah and Bob Feathers are all, you know, as freshmen, those guys are mature. So they really just all are here for one reason. They came here, you know, thinking the same way, and I think they have a really good sense of who they are. You know, we realize, I mean, what we're averaging, hitting like 230 something a game. We're not this stellar offensive juggernaut. We go out and we play, serve the ball in the court, block well, play good defense, and hope to outlast the guys we play.
You're listening to The Net Live on Volleyball Magazine, talking to head coach of the USC Trojan men, Bill Ferguson. Fergie, we wanted to get your take on the UCLA-BYU incident this past week with the BYU wins, no, we're going to replay it. UCLA wins, no, we're going to replay it the next night. Now BYU wins. What were your thoughts on that whole situation?
Well, after our Irvine match, my SID delivered the message that BYU had won the first and UCLA had won the second, which is what we needed to put us in the position to control our own destiny. So to that degree, with the final outcome of both, I'm thrilled. how it went down was a little troubling to me. It's funny, Sperrell and I talked about it before the match. And especially with us having the whole headset gate at the beginning of the year, I was, heck, we didn't get to replay our match or whatever, you know. So that part was troubling to me. I wasn't there, so it's really hard to comment on it. They had the control to, in that situation, they had a unique opportunity in the sense that both teams were going to play again the next night. And it didn't involve any travel. I guess given what I heard went down, and given that BYU had, I guess they formally filed a protest. So if they formally filed a protest and there was grounds for them to rethink it, and they did it, then great. But it just seems, there's a side of me that says, okay, if a logical side that says, okay, great. But then there's also another side of me that said, they didn't like the outcome, so they got to play again. Why? We didn't. But that's just, I gotta live in a world where I gotta focus on my guys and move forward and worry about Long Beach.
Seems a little unsettling to you that this is the way it could go down at the end of a match.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, heck, in 2010, Tony hit a ball at Northridge to go up, for us to go up 2-1. And, and Tom Ulibarri was the lines person. He called it in immediately. It was right in front of him. And Kevin Cole was the up ref, and he overruled Tom. Unfortunately, McNiff was right front. They were in row five. McNiff went right back to serve, aced us, and they went up 2-1. And we ended up losing and getting knocked out of the MPSF playoff. So, when I look back, but clearly I'm over that. we didn't get to replay that. So that part is a little troubling, but it is the world we live in, I guess. And you just, I'm a kind of guy where you see what you can do about it. If you can't do anything about it, you move on and control what you can and move on. And that's, it ended up working out for us at USC. I feel bad for the BYU side. I feel bad for the UCLA side. I think the league, we're the best athletic league in the country in any sport. So to have that happen is kind of a bummer. But, if this is the first time we've had something like that in the however many years the MPSF has been in existence, then if you look at it that way, then we're probably doing all right.
All right, you mentioned the fact that you could host the MPSF tournament. That's unknown at this point, but you will host the Final Four. Talk about the preparations and give out some information for folks that want to attend the Final Four.
Yeah, we're pretty fired up about it. We think we can put on a really cool event. It's a great venue, and just about every seat is good. The semis on May 3rd are at 6 and 8 p.m. Tickets, you can go to gettrojantix.com, and there's a postseason championship events link. The tickets are all session tickets are $25 for adults and $20 for children, seniors, and students. The all session tickets, you can get a group rate for $10, and you can go to the USC ticket office. You can call them at area code 213-740-GO-SC. You can also go on the USC men's volleyball website, and there's a NC2A championship link that you can take you right to the ticket deal also. The other cool thing is the AVCA is having their convention there as well. So throughout the weekend, if you're a coach or a player that's just interested in coaching or learning anything, the AVCA has got some awesome stuff going on. I know they are – I am blowing up. They are they're having some really cool speakers. I know from the women's side of things, I know Mick's speaking, Kevin Hambley's speaking, and Seeley is speaking. So those are all, you know, great coaches that I think people can learn from. On the guys' side of things, they are doing something that's really cool. It's a session called Why We Win, and they did it at the women's convention, and they had a moderator, which was a coach from Toledo. I don't know his name or know him, but he kind of seemed like he knew everybody and did a really good job of asking these great coaches. You had Jerry, you had Cook, you had Mary Wise, Jim McLaughlin, and Dunning. And there was a panel, and this guy asked him a bunch of really cool questions. I sat in on it. It was one of the coolest things I've seen going to any of those kinds of things. And they set one up here that Sam Schweitz, he's going to moderate. And Sam's the head coach at Princeton and pretty much knows everybody. Hopefully I'm busy and can't do it. They've talked to me. I know they've talked to Spira, Mark Pavlik, Marv Dunphy, Al Skates. So there will be a similar Why We Win there, and I think that in and of itself would be really worth the price of admission to hear those people talk about their programs and why they do what they do. We're also going to have a kids clinic the day of the finals, and it's going to be run as of right now. There's the thought that the youth national team may be training here. We're not totally confirmed with that. But this kids clinic will be run by USA Volleyball as of right now. If not, we're going to take it over. but it'll be for kids ages 5 to 13. It's limited to 150 people. And again, it's on. You can sign up for it at gettrojantix.com. And like I said, we'll probably have the youth national team training here during that time, so they'll be around. So the whole weekend is going to be pretty cool. And, you know, when you look at the standings in the MPSF and you see, you know, gosh, there's five teams right now within a match of each other. So with that, and then, you know, you throw in the winner of the MIVA and the winner of the EIVA, and you're going to have a pretty cool volleyball weekend.
Hey, Billy, before you go, I just want you to know you gave us two great sound bites that Jeremy's probably going to clip and use for the duration of this show for the next 15 years, and that's I'm blowing up and I got a little gut working, just so you know.
How about the best league in any sport? I heard that one. I like that. I mean, I'm thinking, going through my mind, then going through SEC and some of the other leagues out there going, best league in any sport. I like that comment.
Well, look at it. You've got... Ever since the inception of the MPSF, or if you just want to take all the teams in our league in its different formats, you know, the SEVA and all that, we've won every national championship in the history of our sport except for, what, four?
Yeah.
Name a league in any sport that's done that.
It's a good point.
I mean, I don't think there's no way. I mean, as good as the SEC's been in football, granted in the BCS, you know, scheme of things, the SEC's been great, but I don't think there's any league in any sport that has done what we have done, and that's something that I've always looked at and thought was pretty special, and I think we're all pretty fortunate to be a part of it.
And you've been able to do it without having to add in teams that have begun to rise. Like if Ohio State won the national championship, then you try to add them to the MPSF like football would.
True.
Very
so,
good.
So,
Bill Ferguson,
yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate all the information. The Final Four is going to be a great event. I am sorry to miss it. I will be out of town, but I know lots of other people should be there. And good stuff on that Why We Win panel discussion. I know we heard a lot of stuff about that back in December and how amazing that was. I'm sure it'll be just as amazing with the men's coaches. We wish your team the best of luck, and hopefully you don't face BU during the playoffs, because – man, they've had all kinds of problems.
Face who?
BYU.
Oh. Nah, it's fine. Man, Chris has done a good job. I mean, walking into that is your first go around. That's pretty crazy to walk into that. I'm fortunate in a sense that I got to kind of build my group, but he's doing a good job. And there's five teams right now, going to be eight, and we're all looking at each other going, we're going to have to beat each other one or two more times to get there. So that's going to be pretty brutal.
Fantastic. Thanks, Fergie. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Better, Ferg. All right,
take care.
All right, Bill Ferguson from USC.
Awesome.
Best league in any sport. Love that call. And if you want information about the upcoming Final Four, again, gettrojansticks.com.
I posted the link on our Facebook page.
Fantastic. $25 for adults, $20 for kids. That seems like a good deal. Or call 213-740-GO-SC. And remember, that convention's something worth seeing. Chris McGee is still with us on the line. DJ Roche is here in-house. We'll be back in just a moment. We will have College Volleyball Weekly coming up with Jay and Mike, in addition to a discussion about the AVP sale and bump record for iPhone, not BlackBerry. Right back.
Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine. Volleyball Magazine has been serving the volleyball community for over 20 years with the latest in volleyball news and information, product reviews, athlete profiles, fitness, health, and travel-related features. It's published 9 times a year. Volleyball Magazine brings you the inside to the access of sports' biggest stars. Whether you're interested in junior, collegiate, or professional level, sand or indoor, Volleyball Magazine has you covered both on and off the court. Visit us now. Do it. www.volleyballmag.com. And subscribe for 1 year for only $19.99. Do that now and receive a new water bottle, a $49 value, free compliments of our friends at Naturally Energized Water Bottle Company. Volleyball Mag, the industry's number one volleyball magazine.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on the Volleyball Magazine website.
You and Jay arguing online about the band.
And DJ Roche, would you like to sell it?
M83.
This is one I actually knew.
I know. It's the first.
That's the second.
Are you sure?
I've known at least two bands. Never mind that I have missed at least 20 bands that you've played.
It's all good.
Including Stevie Wonder, if he's
Stevie
actually
Wonder
a
is.
Band. Yeah. Not sure about that.
It really bothers me, in case you wonder.
Chris McGee, what did you think about Bill Ferguson?
Well, I love Fergie. We got history. We go way back. I think he's done a remarkable job at USC. I think he's one of the best recruiters in the country. He's got a phenomenal staff over there with Cam and Nygaard and all those people around. And you know what? He's doing the right things, man. He's building it up. He understands that you got to develop the chemistry between the older guys and the younger guys. And he's really brought back that USC program. He's gotten the alumni involved. And we've talked about it on this show. You can't give him anything but props on what he's done at USC, and that he has this young team with a freshman center right here in the hunt with possibly getting the one seed. It's pretty remarkable, and I love what he's done with Tony Cirelli. Tony's gotten a lot of flack over the years when he's a freshman at the national championship game against Irvine, kind of losing his cool, not playing great last year in the Final Four against Santa Barbara. But you got to give the kid a lot of credit, and some of that goes to Fergie as well and that staff for mentoring him and keeping with him. And now the kid's, being a great leader, and that's what college sports is all about. You know, these guys learning the process and the journey. You know, if it was easy, then we'd all do it. You know, you can't just give up on kids. There's always a learning process, and college sports, this is a nasty business. You know, you got to win, and you got to win now. So when you lose, it's tough, and to keep that train going from last year's, I can't call it a debacle, but, they were the number one team going in, and everyone thought they were a heavy favorite. For them to lose in the semifinals was tough. And for them to regroup, bounce back, get Tony's mind right, and involve these young freshmen, a phenomenal job. And when I was kidding when I said, hey, you're coach of the year, because it hasn't been voted on yet, but I can't think of anybody else that can get that award. It would just be ridiculous.
Talk about Ciarelli and his future. 6'6", 220. That's a big dude. Where's the number 14? That's a great number. But
did he get your permission for that?
I thought there was. Yeah, I'll license it out anytime. I mean, where's 14 in the world of volleyball? I thought Fergie had a good point when he talked about going to the next level and talked about the power with which Tony's able to hit the ball, because he is 220, because he does hit the weights. And this has been a problem. There's a lot of space available at the outside hitter position internationally and on our national team, because a lot of guys are coming out of college, and he talked about Sander, he talked about Lawson, of course Tilly's a French guy, but talked about all those players and their build, their slight of build. When you get to the international level, I don't care if you can hit with range. I'd love it if you could. I'd love you to bring the whole package. But if you're going to bring range or power, bring power, because long term that will work for you. You will gain the range through the experience. You'll learn to hit with range and power. But so many guys who come to the international level at 22 years old, they don't have power at that point. They don't build it from 22 to 30. Either you built it before and you put in the work, or you didn't. And it's not that you couldn't from 22 to 30. You could. But that mindset, bringing that mindset that, yes, I'm going to be a big, strong guy, hit the ball harder because I hit the weights, because I work hard off time from volleyball, that attitude, when you have it in college, seems to transition to the national team better.
And you need that power in the international game because guys are bigger, faster, stronger?
Yeah, because the block is bigger.
Yep.
And the guys will position themselves better. Right away, guys who don't come with range, or pardon me, don't come with power but come with range, you go, great, well, we just took away the high over, the high soft over. That's gone because the block is now 4 or 5 inches taller at least.
Yeah.
And we took away your shot under the block because a guy will just go and stand there. Plus, we took away the high hands without power because the guy will go stand behind the block in the corner and take that up. And the guy down the line can play defense now, which in college, nobody can play defense down the line. The ball's just there too quickly. And so what happens to these guys is they keep rolling it over the top, and it takes about two matches for guys on the other side to figure that out. And they change their defense around, and all of a sudden that effectiveness is gone.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can hit with power, you can still hit off the top of the block and work the sides and have it go out and everything. There are certainly issues with only having power because the block will figure that out.
Yeah.
But I think you have an easier time learning to hit with range versus trying to develop power while you're playing professionally.
Barney, one more note on Fergie. since we're talking about SC, is I feel like on like a personal level, I've known him for over 20 years, and I consider him a good friend. But I'm pretty proud of kind of where he's come from and what he's become. I mean, you remember Fergie was a great surfer, and he played volleyball in high school and stuff. But he was a ref when we were all playing and stuff, and he worked his way up. You know, I mean, he started a club and he got really successful at it, and really learned from a lot of great coaches. He studied coaches like Bill Parcells and NFL coaches and basketball coaches, and he put in a lot of work and time. And people out there weren't sure if he would do the job at SC. Like, you know, you think SC, you think huge name. And, you know, Fergie didn't have a huge name at that time. But he's humble. He gets it. He's a great recruiter. He puts great people around him. I mean, he's really, really done a great job from that standpoint. I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
Yeah, he's done a great job of sitting at the foot of the master, and whoever that master may be, and learning from that person, whether he's been in the USA gym. I remember Fergie, when he was first around the USA gym, he'd be in practice for our national team all the time.
Yeah.
And watching what we're doing, or being at convention. And that's when he talks about convention, both the women's side and the men's side. Doesn't matter if you're a male or female coach, meaning you coach males or females. You should be at both of these conventions, or at least one. But you need to go to these conventions to hear like these panel discussions, or hear from individual coaches about training techniques and pick up new ideas. And because it's not just in the drills. Look, I can look up a bunch of drills. I can look up a bunch of drills. I can come up with a bunch of drills. I can make all that stuff up on my own. No problem. Without going to convention. What you're getting from convention, I think, is so much more than just the drills. You're getting the thought behind the philosophy of team construction, the philosophy of recruiting, the philosophy of talent evaluation, the philosophy of person evaluation. You heard Fergie say it. You got to recruit character. But how do you evaluate that in the limited amount of time and touch you have with these kids? Who do you talk to? What questions do you ask? What do you do with the kids? You don't have a Wunderlich exam you can just give them and go off that. So there's a lot of tools that I think are difficult to develop and not easy to convey over the internet, or in an article of any kind. You got to be there. You got to meet the people. You got to do the work and be diligent about the discussion. I think Fergie has done that.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm looking for Dan Madden. But I think we have our College Volleyball Weekly guys, so we're going to move on to that. And Dan Madden, you got to give us a call about bump record here. Jeremy's been hitting it between the break, and he was mad.
I'm starting to dominate.
Mad when I took the phone away because he was looking forward to pancaking, and the ball was on fire.
Fire.
Hey, Barney.
Like it down.
Barney.
Yeah. Yes.
Are you guys going to be touching on the AVP? Because I'm leaving after AVCA.
Yeah, we got to touch on the AVP, but we have AVCA right now. So can you give us 5 minutes after AVCA, or do you have to go?
Yes, ma'am. No, I can do that.
Yes, ma'am.
They call you ma'am?
What's up with
you? Sounded
that?
Like ma'am. I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah. Yeah, I said ma'am, and he knows it.
Here we go. In association with the American Volleyball Coaches Association, the Net Live is proud each week to present the College Volleyball Weekly, the best that was, and a preview of what will be in the world of college volleyball. It's still the men, and we're getting down to tournament time here. You heard talk about it with Fergie of USC. They could host the MPSF tournament, which of course has provided both teams into the Final Four, the at-large plus the MPSF bid, all but once in the history. The EIVA and the MIVA will have automatic bids, but there's a lot happening. We've taken a couple of weeks off, and there's a lot to talk about. The USC Trojans sit atop the standings, and that's why they get this music. So let's welcome in our correspondents, Mike Sondheimer and Jay Hosick. Gentlemen, big
welcome. What is going on, fellas?
All right.
Should have been there Friday at the Wooden Center.
Good gracious, let's get to it right off the bat. Let me summarize everything we've gone through. Mike, what happened?
All I know is that the referee lost control on a play. Eventually it got decided correctly that the alliance person had ruled the ball out. They played it out to 2018. The conference, in my opinion, the MPSF, overstepped their bounds by making a decision based on policy, not by rules. The referee may have been wrong, but the referee has final decision. And if anybody was disadvantaged the way they replayed it, it was UCLA, because they replayed it from 16-15 that night when they're saying, and the official ruling should have been replayed by 16-16, UCLA still won, BYU took a minute to win on Saturday, and now both those teams are probably not going to win the conference because of what happened.
Okay, so
and I don't know if I haven't found anybody in the volleyball community that's ever heard of a match one night and then being replayed the next night. And it wouldn't have happened if UCLA and BYU weren't playing back-to-back nights. Normally you're playing a different team at a different site and conference. And if that had happened, I don't think it would have gotten replayed either.
I would agree with you, Sandy. And here's my take on it. I know you're going to ask me about it, but here's my take on this quickly. But I know you have a question. But Sandy, first of all, you did a great job announcing on that Friday and Saturday night match. You were great on TV. My question is this, though: the referee initially called it in, which means that the match should have been over. And I think the question on everybody's mind is, why was Al allowed to go all the way across and literally berate that official in front of everybody? I think that's the question everybody has. And
well, first off, the referee, okay, go back. The referee never, ever called it in. The Lions person made a cupping motion like it was out. Never, ever called it in. The referee thought that the person called in. The referee never, ever signaled the ball, you know, never made the movement, hey, ball in the thing, or I'm overruling the referee. So technically the match was over 17-15 BYU, which is somebody there, I could live with 17-15 BYU if that's what the referee did, in which case
right.
The coach can come out and protest. Because he was on his side of the net and came and did it. That's on top of BYU at 15-14 when there was a Taylor Sander ball that probably was touched that they thought they won being all over the court where they could have been yellow carded for, too.
No.
So, I mean, it's just a situation. It was like lack of control, but my problem is that if you're going to turn something over, you turn it over because of a rule, not because of a policy. And the way it's interpreted out now is that, okay, well, they violated some policies, but the match was settled on the court. And BYU ended up with two match points. Even after the 16-15, they still had another match point at 17-16, and that's where it should have been decided and not brought back the next day or do something, play over game set five, not 2 points.
Really, there are bad calls all the time in matches. This just happened
right.
to
it's
be on the last
call.
Point for
right.
the match, and a point that decided the match. It seems to me that even if you have a bad call, let's say 1 point before the end of the match, and then you lose the next ball, could you protest based on that and then have to go back and do a replay?
Yeah, I mean, it just opens up protests for anything from around the country because nothing's happened like this. And that's the problem is that the referee is still the arbitrator. The referee is still deciding. I've seen countless matches where the referee has made mistakes, in my opinion, going either way. And there were mistakes made. BYU, in my opinion, probably should have won set five a couple of times, but they didn't because of calls that were made by human judgment. It doesn't mean other people have to, because they're so upset, turn the call over. That's
yeah,
why.
And also, you watch that fifth game from TV, and how many unforced errors? I think there were 8 or 9 unforced errors by UCLA alone in that fifth game. And that, I mean, that alone should have been the clincher for the match, but BYU wasn't helping them out much either.
No,
so.
BYU was ahead the whole way, and I mean,
yeah.
you know, they had their, and again, they had their chances after this, two more chances to still pull it out and win it.
But how much does this add to the folklore of Al Skates in 50 years when people talk about this match? They're going to say, you know, you should never argue with the ref's decision. Really? Because I can pull the skates and I can get the thing overturned. I mean, that's the folklore that is Al Skates. So.
I know. It's just a bad precedent. I think this is a bad taste in my mouth, regardless of what happened to do it. I mean, now, if they had turned over and given BYU the win and said it was 17-15, that would have been a better decision than coming back and playing 2 points.
Hmm.
Mike,
yeah, but you know how much those two coaches don't like each other.
Yeah.
When the appeal went in, who does the appeal go to, and who adjudicated this process?
It goes to the MPSF commissioner, who consulted with the head of officials, and there was input from the BYU Associate AD, who's on the NCAA Volleyball Committee. There was input from UCLA, and the final decision was made by the commissioner. And again, if you read what's on the Internet, and again, I haven't seen the actual, you know, direct thing, but it looks like it was made based on policy, not based on rules, because there's an MPSF rule that the referee has the final decision in all matters.
All right.
Good or bad.
Duly
and again, we've all been through this. We've all been through touch calls. We've all been through lines
yeah.
calls. We've all been through this where I'm sure everybody's gone through losing something that they should have won, and you live with it.
Yeah, I've been through basic cheating overseas in particular.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we've seen things and stuff, and that's the problem. I guess to make them come back and play, that's what's unprecedented, and that's what I don't think should have happened one way or the
other.
All right,
now the real question everybody wants to know, Sandy, was the ball in?
I think it was in. I also think
okay.
Taylor Sander had a touch at 15-14. So from that standpoint, yes, for BYU, but there were some other calls, too, that,
sure.
that went the other way. And again, it was just the way it happened and the way it went down, but the problem that I have with the MPSF is you let them settle it on the court. They came back, they played it out, and again, both teams had chances to win. It was over, not to replay it again.
Yeah. All right, we talked about it. Time for the Hawkeye system. That's it. Get the Hawkeye system installed and buy yourself some headsets. So they better do some fundraising in the men's program here. Or maybe you could do program to buy the Hawkeye system. That's what has to happen.
Anyhow, is it, Penn State gets to play BYU now. That'll make it fun. SC's just got to beat Long Beach Northridge. They get the conference, and UCLA's still got to play Stanford because how the top five are going to come out is still wide open.
Yeah, it's going to be a dogfight.
But for the last week, nothing has changed all the way through the top 10. Top 10 remain exactly the same in the latest ABCA poll just out. USC 1, UC Irvine 2, UCLA, BYU, Stanford, Pepperdine, Penn State, Long Beach State, Lewis, and Ohio State in 10th position. And then 11th, Cal State Northridge moving on
and
up.
And give Fergie credit because he's done amazing things with that USC team after what he had last year and the players he lost to get them to the stage and put them in the position to basically be home for the whole tournament and be in the NCAAs at their place. And give him credit for what he's done.
If you vote Fergie Coach of the Year from USC, will your wages be garnished at UCLA?
Well, he's got a UCLA wife, so we have to go that. He's got a UCLA kid. The kid's going to go to UCLA, so we're set from that standpoint.
Okay. All the way finish out the top 15, Cal State Northridge, UC San Diego, Pacific, Loyola of Chicago. And then number 15, Jay's been talking about him for months. He was way ahead of the curve on this one, Harvard.
Oh, you know, sometimes the brain, the master's degree, they come into play. Listen, I've been touting them all year long, and I've been speaking about how the EIVA in general this year has really taken a step up and is starting to make people take notice of them. This is not the EIVA of old. Even back in the day, they had great teams in there. But, you know, EIVA with us and Princeton and Harvard and Sacred Heart, I mean, not St. Francis and George Mason, I mean, those are all good teams. And Harvard this year, deservedly so, making it to the top 15. I don't even know if they've ever been in the top 15 ever before, but they were an absolute handful for us on Saturday.
Can we protest something to replay set five? Maybe Harvard will have a better chance to beat Penn State if we play it again.
You know what? If I could run across the court and berate the up official and not get a yellow card, it'd be kind of fun. But, you know, yeah, not only Harvard, you know, almost taking it to us, and we were down 0-2 and came back to winning 5.
Yeah, which is
the
nice
week
win.
Before, then, yeah, it absolutely is. And Princeton, the week before, we were down 2-1. In the fourth game, we're at 23-all. And Princeton battled. They had seven serves for match and probably a dozen swings for the match, and we ended up beating that one 37-35. Princeton's a good team, and they're only going to get better. Both those teams are only going to get better. So good for Harvard, and nice to see them finally get some recognition they deserve.
Yeah, I think it's great. The East is coming along, but I also think for Penn State, it helps to win 2 5-set matches and win like that when you get in the tougher matches coming up the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, absolutely it does. When you go out west, you know you're going to play the best, and then when you come back home, you want to be able to continue to play against teams that are going to push you. And both those teams this year, along with St. Francis and along with George Mason, they're good teams. It's making us have to work harder than usual, which is good for us in our program. So
and now we talk about who's going to be number one seed in the Midwest, since the Midwest is looking like the MPSF.
Yeah, Liz, what is now Ohio State is now in first place. Lewis is now in second. Loyola third. IPFW, Arnie's Army, beating Ball State this year, this last match.
Big
for the
win.
First time, I think, in the last 17 meetings, Sunday, something like that.
It's been a long time. Yeah, many years.
Yep, so that's a good win for them. Grand Canyon was in first, dropped all the way down to fifth, but they're still in the hunt, and Ball State is trailing up a little bit behind them. So some good stuff going on in both Midwest and East Coast this past couple weeks.
Talking about tough matches, let's bring it back to the West Coast for a moment. And, Mike, UC Irvine lost to Southern Cal 3-1 and then defeated Pepperdine, number 6, although it took 5 sets. A couple of tough tests for the Anteaters.
The biggest thing for UCI is that Kevin Tilley, who is playing as well as anybody, has been off the last several matches. And if he doesn't come back hot, UC Irvine isn't going to go a long way in the playoffs. They have depth, but he's somebody who can just really take over a match and has really struggled for whatever reason with his hitting the last few matches. And they're just not playing as well. And You look at Stanford playing very well right now. They get a shot at UCLA this weekend, and they're going in hot. And then BYU played a great first night. What I feel sorry for BYU is that BYU used up so much emotion on Friday, and then winning the 2 points on Saturday, they had nothing left for the match. UCLA was going to be inspired because it was Al's last match regular season, and UCLA played great. But BYU, there was no fire or emotion compared to what they had on Friday, and that they had their chance to win the conference outright if they had won the second match from UCLA. And that's what, you know, really just took away from it. Those five teams, though, any two of them can come out and be there, you know, come USC May 3rd and 5th.
Speaking of UCLA, didn't San Diego beat UCLA a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, so Caldwell didn't play. It's how valuable Kyle Caldwell is, one of the best players in the country. Couldn't play because of Achilles problem on Friday. Comes back against Irvine. UCLA beats Irvine 3 straight on Saturday. So he's as valuable as anybody, any player in the country right now.
Absolutely.
Sandy, I'm looking at the second half of the MPSF here. Stanford, Pepperdine, Long Beach, and Northridge currently. Should it finish that way, is any of the second group of four teams capable of picking off the top four, who are SC, BYU, UC Irvine, and UCLA?
Yes. I mean, and they have. I mean, Pepperdine's been so close. I mean, they've gone five with several teams this year, and he's got a great young team. Long Beach has beaten UCLA this year. Long Beach has, you know, battled a few other people. I mean, you just have to, you know, look at the way the conference. UC San Diego won five in a row. Kevin Ring's done one of the best coaching jobs in the country down at UC San Diego. They're competitive with everybody, and Northridge is playing really well right now. They gave Stanford a battle on Saturday. So I think, you know, there's definitely going to be, I think, at least one upset that first weekend.
And not a and another controversial call at the CSUN Stanford match. Apparently, CSUN should have taken that match, and even the announcers on the TV said, "Yeah, there was a touch on that, and the refs missed it, and that would have given the fifth match." So,
if they had known what happened, they
should have
protested and had the, you know,
they should have. And Jeff Campbell, being a UCLA guy at one time, should have already had that.
He should have been right out in that court at the referee that touch. But again, seriously, we're joking about this stuff now. We shouldn't have to joke about it. I mean, the whole thing was created, and it's going to be a joke for a long time. It's also going to be a cause of things because it wasn't handled the way it should have been handled.
Yeah.
Okay, Andy, before we move on to our predictions for this next week, matches to watch, give me, since you're the font of knowledge, Al Skates stepping on the floor, as soon as he crosses onto the floor and starts yelling at the referee, isn't that a yellow card?
No, because the match was technically over.
Okay.
I've looked at all the different possibilities in this. I can tell you anything that happened from 14-14 on, and what, you know, what should be a violation and not be a violation, and what happened. And again, it comes down to a lack of control. I don't know why the Lions people didn't have flags. They had flags on Saturday, a whole bunch of different things. But the bottom line is it wasn't handled well, and the conference, I don't think, handled it well in making them come back and play the next day. So it's just a sore eye for the sport of volleyball. But maybe it'll get some publicity. Maybe it'll get picked up in USA Today or ESPN or someplace, because I think it's unprecedented in college sports. I mean, look at how many basketball games. Look at the football game earlier in the year when the field goal, you know, was wide and it was counted as good and that type of thing. Well, yeah, the referees get in trouble, but the game doesn't get replayed.
No, just get them out there to kick it, you know, pipe in some sound noise and have the kid kick it.
Sure, let's just do that. In another sport, in basketball, there was a shot that was made after the final buzzer. They went back and reviewed it, and they still got it wrong.
I like how you're the Knish. You're the Knish of volleyball. You read all the angles.
Sandy, last thing. We need to get Al on this show. Are you available to help us on that, or we got to go through UCLA?
You can go through Sports Info, but I'm sure you can get Al on the show. I mean, they get done with practice on Monday, usually around 10:30 or 11. I'm sure he'd be happy to be on the show.
All right.
Just tell him Fergie's a regular every week. He'll be happy to do it.
There you go. Gentlemen, hit me with the upcoming important matches, Jay, for this week.
Before I start, I want to give a shout-out. A couple of people came out to me this past couple of weeks. Cody Kessel, John Kessel's son, plays at Princeton. Yeah. That kid is legit and is going to be an absolute beast for that team for the next few years. He wanted to come up and say hi. He listens to the show all the time. And Jeff Wussner, another guy out there in the New Jersey area that's listening to you guys. You guys are reaching the masses. There are people coming out of the woodworks, and so continue to come up and say hi. Also, Vinny Lopes, I want to make a special shout-out to you. You are doing some great things for volleyball, for women's volleyball, and the tweets you did for the Ball State IPFW match. Well done, my friend. All right, for the matches coming up this week, Obviously, we are going out to BYU, and I don't know if there's going to be a headset gate, a serve gate, or a, you know, some kind of other gate, but it should be an interesting couple of matches. Harvard, NJIT, that's Kevin's favorite team. They are battling out, and Harvard right now is number 2. NJIT is number 5. They only take the top 4 teams for the EIVA tournament. That's coming up real fast, so that's going to be a battle for NJIT, see if they can come back in. And NGIT versus George Mason, that's another big match. In the Midwest, IPFW picking up against Ohio State. That's going to be a foeman to watch. Loyola and IPFW, and Ohio State is playing George Mason, another crossover match for the EIVA and the MIVA. Those are ones that I'm going to be watching this week with some interest.
Mike.
I think we have to look at Long Beach State gets a shot at hosting USC, and so does Northridge, just kind of see where they are going into the playoffs. And then the biggie is UCLA at Stanford on Saturday if UCLA gets by UOP on Friday. Pacific is actually, you know, a team we don't really talk about. It's had a pretty good year. They've played well, but they've lost a lot of 4- and 5-set matches, and they get UCLA on Friday, which UCLA can't be looking ahead to UOP on to Stanford on Saturday. The same thing will happen that San Diego did.
And San Diego's still in the hunt, yes?
I think mathematically they're still in the hunt, but it looks like Northridge and Long Beach are going to be in with Pepperdine.
Good job down there, Kevin Ring. Great job.
Yeah, according to the MPSF website, it looks like the asterisk on the side here. It looks like the Pepperdine and Stanford teams and Long Beach are all qualified on listing through 6th. At this point, tied for 4th, tied for 6th. So it's all about Northridge and that last spot.
Right.
Yeah.
And Geeter, I'm sure, is going to help them. He might be out protesting himself if something doesn't go right for them.
Well, let's put him on the lines, and I'm sure he'll make the right appropriate call. Very good. Gentlemen, Jay and Mike, thank you so much for all the information. And, Mike, we hope that you're okay with your university after all your comments here on the show.
I love to see, but I mean, you know, like I say, it happens, and that was a decision, and I'm speaking for someone who's been around volleyball for a long time and was there, and if BYU had won, you know, it would have been real interesting, but I mean, but the situation is what it is that both teams end up 1 set behind USC, and USC has their own driver's seat this weekend to be home for the whole playoffs.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate
it. See you guys.
As always.
Bye.
Jay Hossack. Mike Sonheimer. Getting it done.
Hey, Barney.
Yo.
I got a special guest sitting next to me right now, Dane Blanton.
All right. Danger one. I was watching him interview Chris Paul. Dane, it was fun listening to you interview Chris Paul the other night after the Laker game.
Yeah, you know, it was awesome dealing with a guy like that. Great character guy and great leader for the team. And but most of all, I'm fired up. I'm on the road with Geeter now. We're kind of having a good time in Memphis right now. Clippers play the Grizzlies tonight and on a little road trip, but everything's cool.
I loved it that they went to you for information for your interview with Chris Paul. Then they later flashed back, either through it again, to Chris Paul now talking to the wider media. And all these guys are standing around. It appeared the only person allowed to ask questions was you because you asked another 4 questions in a row.
Yeah, that's the VIP treatment they give me. But
only a gold medalist gets that treatment, guys.
No, I usually start off the interview, and then it opens up to the rest of the press.
So what I would really like to see is I'd like to see a Clippers-Nuggets matchup on ESPN because you guys would be there, the both of you, and then you would have Marlo working for the Nuggets, then you could have Heather Cox working the ESPN broadcast, and really it could be volleyball taking over the world of basketball.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Heather sat right next to us the other day at the Clipper game. She does such a great job. And then when Marlo was in town with the Nuggets, he came on Clippers Live, so it was me interviewing Marlo. It was pretty funny.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Circle of life, Kevin.
Barney, I don't know if you saw, did you see the Kevin Love segment that Geeter hosted? And we got the interview about his whole experience this summer playing on the beach volleyball tournament in Manhattan.
Do you mean how his little dalliance with volleyball made him possibly the MVP of the league this year in basketball and how the training techniques that he picked up in his 1.5 weeks of volleyball preparation that he took to the basketball world and really redefined what it means to be a big man in the NBA?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. I mean, the cross-training does incredible things for his game. I mean, you're for sure a 2015
guy.
2015 guy, yeah, if you hit the beach for a little bit.
Right on. Well, I guess we all should have just come from beach volleyball and stepped right into the NBA and said, hey, I'm going to be 20-15. I got this.
Perfect.
You know, the Clippers roster a few years ago, that could have happened. Or the Nuggets, for that matter.
I don't like your tone.
I think the Nuggets were holding open tryouts back when I was on the national team because they were that. This is pre-Melo era.
So the ABP guys, what do you think?
Yeah, let's talk about this. And my apologies to Dan Madden. I know who's hanging on. We will get to bump record in just a second, Dan, but we are under pressures with the two NBA gentlemen that we have on the line currently. Let's talk about this AVP sale because the AVP, of course, went out of business in 2010 and has most recently been suing Cuervo and IMG for the use of yellow and black, apparently. I didn't know yellow and black together was a property of the AVP. But now purchased by a gentleman by the name of Donald Sun, who is a UCLA alum, graduated in 1998, which makes him my era of guy. He apparently went to a couple of practices at UCLA and decided that his high school experience was not up to the level of what was needed to make the college roster. But he's fired up about it. He's coming out of the software industry, and he wants to pursue time. Gentlemen, from what you know about Donald Sun, what we've read, and I think we're going to get him here on the show, if not next week, the week after, for a full-scale interview, is this the beginning of the rebirth of the AVP?
Well, I'll talk first, and I'll let Dane go. I did reach out to Donald, and he did email back. He actually has listened to the show, seemed like a really nice guy on email, and he said hopefully next week or within a couple of weeks he will come on. So I know our fans will definitely promote that as quickly as we find out, but I think it would be great to get him on here and just find out what his plans are and why he saw value in the AVP and what ultimately, you know, helped him buy the AVP. But, you know, for me, a lot of people have asked me over this last week what I thought. And, Barney, you and I talked a little bit off air about this before the show started. But for me, in the volleyball world or just the regular world of sports, when people see me around the country, they always ask me, when's the AVP starting up again? The AVP still holds a lot of weight with that name. And that's what I believe. So I think that's what Donald's buying, the whole video library, everything that comes along with it, the name AVP. I think the challenges he's going to face and the hurdles are going to be two. One is, what does that name mean in the business world with sponsors? It can't be very good when you've gone bankrupt so many times. I can't imagine the loyal sponsors are going to want to come back. I don't know. Maybe they will. I mean, some jumped on board with Cuervo IMG. Some jumped on board with Albert. Some jumped on board with Billy and the Corona Wide Open Tour and Steve. So we'll see. That's my one concern. And also is, you know, how are they going to exist with Albert and with IMG and Cuervo? Are they going to merge? There's a lot of questions that I have. So I think that's going to be the real interesting thing. I'm interested to hear Dane's thoughts. He's sitting next to me, ready to get in here.
Dane.
Well, yeah, I agree with Chris that I don't know Donald, but I think this is a positive move in the right direction. And most importantly, it's about getting, you know, like Chris just said, getting this name right back on track in terms of the AVP brand. But there's going to be some growing pains, and I know that Donald's not as focused on 2012 as he would be 2013 because this thing just came down the pipe. But I think we're in a much better place than we were when the AVP was in the other hands. And you know whose hands those were.
He shall not be named. The Voldemort of volleyball.
I could name him, but I might have to put you on hold first. but yeah, I think it's a great move in the right direction. And as Geeter reiterated, these tours are going to either have to coexist or one's going to win out in the end. You know, dealing with Cuervo, dealing with Albert Hanneman's tour. And I think it's great that there's these different options right now. But in terms of it getting to the level that it was, there has to be an identity in the United States. And the AVP has that name behind it. It's just a matter from a business sense and from a volleyball sense what Donald Sun plans to do with it and how quickly he plans to expand and whatnot. But I think we'll have a big pop coming off of 2012, and hopefully they can use that momentum, you know, depending on how well we do in the Olympics. And that's going to be a big window to see what happens. But I think right now it's pretty much all speculation on what's going to be next.
See, it's interesting you bring up the Olympics because I don't think that matters. I used to really feel that mattered, what the Olympic results were. But I think that cycle has moved out, and the last Olympics showed us that. We got gold for the United States in three of the four possible indoor and beach volleyball events. The United States taking silver in the other one, the women's indoor, but gold everywhere else. And it didn't do anything. You had within 2 years the tour was out of business. You didn't have increased advertising. I didn't think it brought more money into the sport. Maybe notoriety for individual players, but Jeremy has something to say.
But Carrie Misty also didn't play after they won their second gold.
Yeah.
Okay. Are they going to play now? I mean, if you go and win a third gold.
That's the other question, too. Like, do they play after this?
I mean, they're both aging out of volleyball at this point professionally. So you got to wonder. So I don't know that matters anymore. And I bought it. I bought it as a player on the indoor side. I thought, yeah, we do that.
I agree with you in terms of it. It's never been exploited in the correct manner. When Eric and I won in 2000, we had no intentions of playing domestically anymore because we were so disgruntled with the ABP and what they had done to us. But then we, you know, took a chance with Leonard as he tried to rebuild the sport. So the sport was trying to be rebuilt in 2000. Like you said, in 04, it should have gotten more of a pop. And then in 08, after that, it should have gotten a pop. But it's never had the right I think marketing in place to take advantage. I think you'd agree that it doesn't hurt when we start bringing home gold medals, but it definitely hasn't helped. I'd be in agreement with you on that, and that's because of the structure that's in place hasn't been able to really take advantage of it.
Some people have been heralding this as the new beginning for the AVP to return to the glory years, and I've seen this on Facebook in a couple of different groups, and a lot of people saying, oh, we're going to get back to what it looked like here, and they show a picture in 1992, or here, and it's a picture in 1987. Folks, we're a long ways from that. I hate to be the pessimist in this, but I am. I just don't think you're getting back to that point. I think what you have to find is the reasonable endemic support for this sport. I think you have to find that first and then think about the non-endemics, the getting outside of that sort of volleyball box, because even right now, I don't think the community is behind the AVP or beach volleyball the way it was, and just the community itself, forget the wider sports viewing audience. I don't think the endemic community is even behind the sport the way it was 5-10 years ago.
I don't think they're behind right now either because they don't know what to get behind.
Yeah, people still think the AVP exists, even though it hasn't for a couple of years.
I've already had people call me, email me, text me, and be like, oh, you know, when are the AVP events this year?
Right.
I'm like, slow your roll.
Right. So I have questions. When we get Donald on here, I want to know, did he really bid against other people? Because Voldemort made it sound like there were four options. There were four different people bidding for this property and made it sound like they selected Donald Sun for the best for the brand, for the culture, for everything, the altruistic sense of Voldemort that we all have experienced in our talks with him and encounters. And I wonder about the price, $2 million. How much of that was Monopoly money? Was there a get-out-of-jail-free card, and did he get Marvin Gardens involved in that? I just wonder what the trade was there. Was it really $2 million cash for this brand, and what is the video library? What's the valuation of that? How about the due diligence? I wonder what the due diligence looked like in trying to value that property and how that $2 million number was reached. Chris, you mentioned the video library, but where's that getting used? I haven't seen you on here with AVP Classics in quite some time.
Well, the funny thing is, AVP Classics is on all the time, but I only got paid one time when I did it, so that's the bummer. I mean, I wish I got paid every time that thing's on, because if you're trolling around Prime Ticket at 2 a.m. any day of the week, you're finding it. But we only shot 8 of those shows, and that was Fox doing that. That was Tom Fear behind that, and those days are over.
How unfortunate. Good thing you were able to work that into a job with the Angels and Clippers. Good for you.
When we have Donald on, what I want to hear is his business model going to be different than everything that's happened before now? I mean, it has to be.
He sort of insinuated that he would bring tech experience, right? His experience in the tech world
to this. That's what I'll be curious to hear.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'd like to know what the plans are for cooperation. It's been mentioned a couple of times, there has to be some cooperation, but we've also talked about on this show at some point the big fish eats the little fish in the pond. For a while, they're all swimming around together, sharing the food, and then the big fish eventually looks over and goes, huh,
well, I think
what if I eat that?
Yeah, well, I think Geeter said it, like, will some of the tours join together? That's an interesting thought.
Well, guys, right. I think it's so important that, like you said, the tours joining together. But there's a huge audience out there, and there's so many fans that are just dying for a tour or some sort of continuity to happen. I mean, like when Geeter and I travel all the time, I mean, we arrived last night, this guy on Twitter, Mid-South Digs, he's challenging us. He wants us to come down to the local courts in Memphis. I didn't even know they played volleyball, and this happens in every city. They want us to come out and play. Geeter, obviously, a little bit handicapped, and a little, you know, he's been sitting in the chair a lot, but I still got that cut shot.
So, Dane, hold on to the phone. Don't let him have it. I want to know if you have the option, if the meeting is there again, you're looking at Marlowe, McGee, or Cox. Who's your pick?
Cox, for sure. Are you talking about teaming up, the four of us, or what?
Yeah, you're going down the local courts. Who are you taking out of those three?
If I could team up,
you go with me.
Cox, for sure. We used to play in 18 and under tourneys down in Capo, and the magic's still there.
All right, McGee. I don't know how McGee is even in the room. He's got to have fallen off the bed by now. That sandwich he was eating has got to be all over the floor.
And the pizza. Yeah, it's been a rough show for me, but I'm going to bounce back fine next week. And like I always do, you know, I tell you guys to suck it and I'm out of here.
Hey, do yourself a favor, McGee. Go to the Apple Store right now. Get yourself an iPhone. Move on. Join the rest
Blackberry
of us.
Blackberry forever, bro. Blackberry
text
forever.
Without sound. Hey, gentlemen, we know you have more important things to work on. We sure appreciate your participation. Dane Blanton and Chris McGee, thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right. See ya. Catch those guys on Clippers Live and catch them on the Clippers game. Geeter, I got a couple little hits from him when I was watching.
Nice.
Well, they were throwing to Chris on the sidelines, and, of course, Dane in the locker room.
Yeah, Dane comes up and says hi to me in my little booth sometimes at Staples Center.
No, that's good stuff. I thought about you guys. When I was watching it on spring break, I thought about you guys because I thought, wow, the three of them are in the building right now. DJ Roche setting the mood.
Yep.
Getting people pumped, helping Geeter prep for his hit. And then Clippers Live, he's sitting out front.
Let me clarify something, too. People come to Clippers games, and there's also a guy there named DJ Dents, not Sense, like you text me.
Well, my in-laws had the problem with this, right? My father-in-law has been to a couple of games. They don't like DJ Sense.
Well, I find amusing is that people that know me, they're like, oh, you're so much better than DJ Dents. And the people that know Dents are like, oh, Dents, you're so much better than Jeremy. Dents and I are really good friends, and I like him a lot. Well,
is it co-opetition?
No, not at all, because... Oh. At the game, we actually do two different things. I technically am not, quote-unquote, DJing at the game. I'm doing a lot of sound effects. I'm playing a lot of the music before the game, during the game, after the game. Dents is actually on his turntable spinning while the players warm up while they're warming up at halftime as well.
Okay.
And then he does some hosting on the microphone, too. But people see him. They don't see me. So they come to the game. They're like, oh, I thought you were DJing. I'm like, yes, I'm at every single game. You just can't see me because I'm sitting above the last row in the building, and it's dark in my corner, and nobody wants to talk to me.
Okay, so he's the JV for the middle, and anytime the broadcast is not on. Good to know.
Just want to clarify that.
Let's bring into the show a gentleman who used to be on this show full-time back in the day.
Oh.
Sat in your seat. We thought he had technical prowess. It turns out it was more web-based. But this gentleman has been out there on the cutting edge.
Does that mean you kicked him off the show?
No, he got a real job. He got out of here with a real job.
That's what it sounded like.
No, listen, this guy's on the cutting edge of promoting volleyball, developing his own brand. He first came to our attention as Danny Kinda, taking it to Spike Town, putting out T-shirts, and I think a guy who's really a lover of volleyball and put it out there for volleyball, and he's done it again with the new Bump record. The first volleyball game available in the iTunes store. Yeah. Welcome back, Dan Madden.
That's the best intro I've ever gotten in my life. I mean, I've only had like three ever, and two of them are from you, but thank you very much.
All right, I eclipsed myself. Very good.
Dan, yeah.
You contacted me a few months ago and said, hey, I'm in this developmental process. Who do you know? And you eventually settled on a developer, but talk about the idea to put together a volleyball game, and it's you and Billy Allen of Kind of Good, put this together, concepted it, and got it all the way to the iTunes store. Talk about the development and kind of the genesis of the idea.
Well, it actually happened. We're not the first volleyball game. AVP had one, and I know
Canyon
was heavily involved, and that came out in early 2010, around this time, I think. And
it crashed my phone every time I opened it.
Yeah, well, you know, it was. Let me tell you something about developing an iPhone game. It is harder than you think. I put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Well, not blood, but, you know, figuratively speaking, into this project. And, you know, it comes out and you're just like, it's very nice to get it over with, but still you're always like, well, what if I did this? What if I did that? And so the process is a lot. It's a lot of fun. Like, probably 2 years ago when the AVP app came out, Billy and I were talking. We're like, dude, let's do an app. And we're like, okay, what can we do? And it's like, we had this thing where we did the bump record at like a girls club tournaments at Crossroads in Big South. And it was a lot of fun. Like, and I'd walk around with Danny kind of just knocking the ball out of people's hands, like in opening ceremonies, just so they wouldn't beat the Danny kind of record. So we were like, well, doing a full-scale volleyball bump, set, spike, and digging and blocking and serving, that's a lot of stuff, and that's really difficult. And the most fun I have playing iPhone games is when, like, I'm doing just one little thing. Like, my favorite iPhone games are, like, Angry Birds or Tiny Wings, little stuff like that, where it's just one little thing. So we tried that, and you basically just bump the ball up in the air as much as you can. You're basically juggling. You know, I designed the whole thing, and then I got a developer and, you know, worked through the whole thing. It was a lot of time.
It never occurred to you just to do Angry Volleyballs and completely copy Angry Birds?
It occurred to me to copy a lot of things, and then that didn't seem like fun, you know?
Jeremy's playing right now, and this game, you start bumping the ball up, and first you have the indoor ball, then you have the international ball, and then you start inside, then you go outside, then it starts raining, and there's lightning and all kinds of stuff, and there's like four or five volleyballs in the air. How many different iterations of this did you go through before you came up with what was the initial launch? And I imagine there'll be updates and improvements beyond the initial launch.
It was probably about a month of development, and probably went back and forth about 7 or 8 times. And I mean, I'm quite annoyingly a perfectionist, and this it's fun. I really like it, but I'm really looking forward to the update that I have coming, and I'm not sure exactly when that's happening, but we're gonna have a couple updates to the game, and it's gonna make it more difficult for the when you get better. When you're a novice, it's plenty hard, but once you get used to it, like Billy said, it becomes a game of endurance. So we're working on that, but it's going to be much improved. And but you know, it's a lot of fun right now, and I'm very proud of everything.
So when the ball is fire, you put, I think it's 5 touches into a ball, and it goes on fire, and you're supposed to spike it down. Is that an homage to NBA Jam?
It's an homage to Super Spike V-Ball for the original Nintendo. Are you kidding me? You remember that game, right?
You know what? You know what I remember? I remember the Genesis game, Super Spike Volleyball, where the guy would be the crab in the back row, and it was obviously the national team, although it was a bunch of random names. And I remember playing stand-up version, Beach. I had an arcade game in my basement for a couple of years that a friend of mine, Josh Crozier, owned. It was Beach Volleyball or something like that, or Volleyball Kings or something. And it was 2-on-2 on the Beach to 10 rally score, where you could like super pump your guy and just drill the ball to the sand, but I don't remember the Nintendo version.
No, that was Super Spike V-Ball for the original Nintendo, right?
Okay. No, I had a full arcade game in my basement for a while.
You could be the Steve Timmons guy, you could be like the fat beer gut guy, and you could be like, I don't know, some other athletic-looking guys. Yeah, that was one of my favorite.
Hey, guy.
I'm on the beach right now in your game.
That was
I'm
the Barnett
outside.
Guy.
Yeah.
Athletic guy.
Outside, 3 balls. Sorry. Oh my God.
It's only 99 cents on the iTunes store, so it's not a huge investment.
What do you have to look at the iTunes store when you get there? Like to get to the game?
You got a store. Bump record.
Bump record. Cool.
Yep. And it's brand new, so like you'll be able to you can search for volleyball and you'll find it, but you'll have to scroll. Because it's brand new, the keywords and the search engine optimization isn't quite in place yet. Not my fault. Just
All right.
Many more people. You can review it. You when you buy it, you can give it a review and let me know your thoughts.
I bought it. I like it. I've been playing it. My kids like it. It's a good game. Give it a try. I want to see everybody at the American Sports Center out there, all the girls out there playing it when they're out there for the
Yeah. I think the kids, the developing kids will enjoy it a lot. I think it's good for parents to have their kids play volleyball however they can, while in class, during water breaks, at practice, right. So this allows you to do that.
Well, hey, Dan, we sure appreciate the efforts you're making on behalf of volleyball. It's important that people get out there and are on the cutting edge and pushing the sport into new media. And we know you are.
Yeah, I'm doing my best. I had one comment. I played with listener Matt Garthoff, who made all those awesome Barbie doll videos, and he's one of the most creative people I've ever known. And I played an A with him this week, and I had a ton of fun. We were down by 11 points, and we came back and won the match. So
nice.
Pretty stoked about that. So that's a connection that the Net Live made.
Did you get your double A or what?
No, dude, there are a couple teams totally sandbagging. So,
very good.
But next time.
Dan, thanks so much. Bump Record in the iTunes store. Go check it out. Get back
thanks
to work.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Will do. See ya.
Back to that real job he has.
You have to get an iPhone now.
You may have to, just for Bump Record, baby.
Because I don't have enough other things going on. I'm just going to sit home and play that all day.
Yeah. Yeah, don't we all? The Net Live here on a Monday in April 2012. Barnett and Roche right back to wrap the show and let you know what we got coming next week.
The 2012 ABCA Spring Conference, now in its fifth year, is scheduled for May 3rd through 5th on the campus of the University of Southern California and the Radisson at USC. This year's event will be held in conjunction with the NCAA Men's Volleyball Division 1-2 National Championship. Just a few of the speakers attending will be Karch Karai and three of the final four coaches of the 2011 Division I NCAA tournament. For more information and to register today, go to abca.org. See you in LA.
Again, it's been a big, long show. Lots of information about BYU-UCLA. Talk about the AVP sale. Note of 2,000 Facebook friends for us. So we're looking for at least 2,010 Facebook fans by
next Monday.
Yeah, by cool. Next Monday. Talk about Spiker. Worst volleyball film of all time, I think.
The 20 minutes I watched were not good.
Yeah, we'll put it right up there with the Green Flash or whatever that one was. Volleyball Kings.
It was Green Flash at first.
Right.
Volleyball Kings. Volleyball Kings is one of those that's so cheesy that it's almost good.
Almost.
That's why I chose my words carefully.
We got to watch it again. Our copy, I think Dan Madden had the copy. He says it's still at Reed's house.
Gotcha.
Yeah, said Reed stole it from him because he wanted to copy it and watch it.
Reed.
Remember him? He's on the national team. Remember that guy?
Yeah.
Speaking of the national team, they have a few scrimmages coming up, a couple scheduled against Argentina towards the end of this month, coming up, I think, 27th. Down there, there'll be a couple of matches against Argentina as they prepare for the Norseca event, and then one directly before Norseca, May 4th, Friday, May 4th, at the Long Beach Pyramid, the United States getting an opportunity to get in there and play inside of what will be the tournament venue.
Cool.
They will be scrimmaging against each other, so that'll be a red-blue. A lot of fun if you want to see the latest talent that's out there. A lot of fun to see these
I've
guys
been
preparing.
Hearing from people that have bought tickets to the Norseca event because
mm-hmm.
they are legitimately scared that you're going to physically harm them.
Not if they're there.
That's what I'm saying.
No, if you bought tickets,
that's why they bought tickets, so that you don't go to their house and strangle them like you threatened.
You know, that would have been even all the more believable when I was a young guy. You talk about Ciarelli being a little out of control, 6'6", 220 going nuts. It's pretty much Barnett wearing a 14 going nuts. Big thanks to our sponsors, AVCA,
yep.
Hurley, Spire Institute. Visit them at spireinstitute.org. They have a big hand in bringing you this show every week. We want to thank USAV for their interaction with us and access to personnel. Of course, big thanks to Fergie,
great,
for showing up this week
interview.
For a great interview. Give that a read. A little note on Harvard. Thanks to David Portnoy of the ABCA for sending over a note. We know he's listening to the show. Harvard, very first time they have ever cracked the ABCA top 15.
That has to be a good feeling, right?
That's a cool feeling, yeah, especially Harvard. You know, not known for its sports programs. Certainly known for other fantastic things that contribute to the world.
Now, do you think this will like help them get better recruits?
God, I'd hope so. You have a tough time getting into school, though. You better be smart.
Yeah.
We will endeavor to have Donald Sun next week, if not next week, the week after, new owner of the AVP. We will talk to him directly and ask him some of these questions we're talking about. $2 million, really? What does this mean for the brand? What do you know about the sport? Why make this your full-time not obligation. It'll be an obligation.
But that's what he said. It could be his full-time
job.
Yeah.
Full-time job. So why do that? Why that choice? What does that have to do with the stage where he is in life? Of course, same age as me almost. Probably going to be 37. The Vol BQ is happening. Check it out on Facebook. Vol BQ on Facebook. Matt Gardhoff putting on a fantastic tailgate event. Brought in sponsored food. We're going to have hopefully spikers showing. There's going to be vendors. Lots of fantastic volleyball action. Plan on spending your Saturday down there, May 12th.
He did a great promo video that he posted on our Facebook page.
Check that out. Fantastic promo video. Hilarious.
Name drop me on there. I like it.
Got his daughter in there.
Yep. It's great.
Yeah, good stuff. So we definitely want you to attend the Vol BQ, and you get your tickets for the matches through the Vol BQ. So good opportunity to spend a fun Saturday with a lot of other volleyball players. I think they'll even be playing. Order our T-shirts. Support this program. We still have a few T-shirts left. We will have those also at the Vol BQ. The NetLive T-shirts are available on Vala Clothing, VALAClothing.com. Jeremy will administrate that for you. And we've talked about the beach season getting underway. The FIVB is just about underway. 2 weeks and counting to the FIVB season
Brazil. Getting
rolling. Yeah, of course, the end of summer down there, and we're working on the beginning of spring. Big thanks to everybody who tuned into the show today and those who came on the show today. Lots more to talk about next week. Hopefully we'll have Donald Sun for you, and of course we'll have AVCA College Volleyball Weekly as that season begins to wind down and look forward to the Final Four. I am off this week to, let me think about where I'm going, New Orleans.
Nice.
Time to go to the Superdome.
One of my favorite places.
Going to be fun. So I've taken out there Thursday, and we'll be down there for the race on Saturday night. All right, Jeremy.
Let's do this.
Let's spin it up and spin it out. It's been The Net Live for another week. We will see you next Monday live from the home court.
Feel so close to you right now.